welcome to the Drive Podcast. Ted Henley is off for a couple of days. I'm your guest host, Jalen Nye. We have some great conversation on our show today, so let's get right into it. But everyone, still talking about what happened on Friday and continue to drag through a part of the weekend as well. That massive outage at one of Canada's major telecom companies. It happened on Friday. It has resulted in a meeting between the federal industry minister and the CEO of Rogers Communications. We're expecting to hear from François-Philippe Champagne in a few moments. He's holding a news conference following that meeting. And as soon as we hear from him, you'll hear from him. But he put out a statement saying that Friday's disruption was unacceptable. And today he met with the Rogers boss, Tony Staffieri, and other telecom leaders to discuss improving Canada's networks. How is that done? What would that look like? You know that that Rogers outage began on Friday morning, lasted at least 15 hours, knocking out access to healthcare, law enforcement, banking services. Rogers says the outage was caused by a maintenance upgrade. Now, one of the things it showed was the fact that a lot of us maybe don't rely on cash that much anymore. A lot of us don't carry a lot of cash with us, but as well, just, you know, our reliance on the telecommunications industry. It's not just about emails with your friends or connecting to work. It showed us once again how intertwined we are with it. Andy Barrar is a tech journalist and a friend of the show. He joins us this afternoon. Hi, Andy. Welcome back.
Hi, Jalen. How are you?
I'm doing okay. So do you carry cash at all anymore, Andy?
You know, when I was a kid, my grandfather told me, he goes, always carry a $50 bill. He's like, fold it up and put it in the back of your wallet just in case of emergencies. So I do carry cash. You know, I took that lesson and I've kept it as an adult.
Andy, what happened on Friday? You know, when we talk about this, it was this outage was caused by a maintenance upgrade. It seems to me that a maintenance upgrade should, I'm not a tech person, but it should be fairly simple, something that would happen on a regular basis, not shut down, 10 million people from accessing services.
Well, a lot of people are familiar with these maintenance upgrades. You know, we do it with our phones. We do it with other devices. It could be like what's called a firmware upgrade. It could be with your printer. This was for the entire Rogers network. And it is absolutely shocking, Jalen, that they could design this network for it to actually fail. It's what they do when they create networks is called redundancy. You make sure if this fails, this will back it up. It's kind of like when you're with your photos. If you back your photos on a hard drive, you have to understand that hard drive might fail. So you want to back it up on something else, just in case. Now, that's like networking 101, and the fact that they designed the system where a maintenance upgrade could shut down the entire network was mind-boggling. And this is not even the first time. This is the second time it's happened. The first was in April of 2021, so not a good look for Rogers at all. It caused widespread disruptions and this really shouldn't ever happen again.
You know, I was talking with a number of tech people just, you know, getting their opinions on this over the past couple of days. And one of the folks that I spoke with said, really, it seems that this system was written up on the back of a napkin years back and it hasn't been updated too much or it hasn't changed that much. What needs to change, Andy?
Well, I agree 100%. Like, I was flabbergasted that they even had a system that was designed like this so that it could fail. What really needs to happen is we've talked a lot about 5G and how we're going to go to the next wireless standard. This is a great lesson for us and for the federal government to understand how critical it is to build the future networks with 5G so that something like this can't ever happen again. And I think it requires these, we have the big three, unfortunately. It requires all of them to now, cooperate with each other to ensure that if one network goes down, another one will back it up, especially for the emergency services. That's another shocking thing, that the nine people couldn't dial 911 on their Rogers phones.
And Andy, that's what I wanted to get to. It seemed, again, mind-boggling that 911 would be that vulnerable.
Well, the federal government, again, had proactively told the networks, no matter what, you have to make sure that people can call the emergency services. And so the networks had all said, okay, no problem. But it took something like this for a network to go down to once again show that they failed in ensuring that their network could provide the 911 service. And that is, this, if we had like a natural disaster or something, you know, they could be very, very critical. There's a lot of people tried to call 911 and they couldn't, and they had to find someone else with a different provider, with a Bell or Telus, to make that call. That's unacceptable in Canada.
Andy Brouard joining me this afternoon. So it really, you know, it showed us a number of things, and I think it was eye-opening for a lot of folks, but really the reliance on the industry. And it's an industry, as you mentioned, you talk about the big three. There's not a lot of other options. The federal government has loosened the rules for some foreign players, but we don't see them rushing in because it's a huge job to get people to switch their providers, isn't it?
Absolutely. And so people tend to not only stay with the provider, but these networks will ask you to bundle all your services with that said provider. And here's the problem. Those people that bundled everything, they were the ones that you were seeing at coffee shops trying to use Wi-Fi because they had no other way to connect to do their work and to get stuff done. So it just shows that there is danger bundling all your services with one of these providers. And it's unfortunate we only have three that we can pick out of. We definitely need more competition in the wireless space inside Canada.
All right. So, you know, lots to talk about, lots to chew on here. We now know that that they're talking about compensation is just going to show up on accounts. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so this is the big question. What kind of compensation are they going to do? Here's what I suspect, and I think this is what they're going to do. They're just going to prorate it for the time of that disruption. So whether it was 1 or 2 days for your specific account, that is what they're going to do for compensation. Now, that is not enough. Think about the small businesses that tried to use Interact. And on a Friday, too, stampede, everything going on, and people couldn't make those pages. How are you going to compensate the small businesses? And I think at minimum, they should provide 1 month free of service for all of the small businesses. But I don't even think that's enough. I think there's so much lost revenue because of this disruption that Rogers needs to pay somehow.
So, Andy, I just another question for you on this front. And I thought, you know, when I got up on Friday, I was on holidays last week, had to do some running around. And I heard about this, and I don't carry cash very often. So I thought, okay, I might be pretty much out of luck without being able to do anything, right, and pay for anything. But I was able to go to the bank and use my Visa card and get money out on that. Why was Visa not impacted? Do you know?
Well, it looks like Interact had some type of deal was exclusively with Rogers. So all the Interact, you know, machines were using Rogers systems. Now, since then, Interact has said that they're going to use the other providers. But I think, again, Rogers made a nice, probably sweet deal to Interact to get that exclusive right to use it. And they touted themselves as the fastest, most reliable network in Canada. In fact, Jalen, when this whole outage was going on, apparently they were telling stores to take those signs down because it was embarrassing that their network went down, and they say they have the most reliable network in Canada.
And so, Andy, you know, we'll leave you with this one. You know, we talk about the need for changes. What does that look like? More possible government involvement with things. We need to, you know, maybe expand the options more, make it more appealing. There's a lot to talk about the system itself. I think following this, a lot of us would expect to see change. Do you believe change will happen?
I do think. I think the federal government, after the fact that this happened twice in about 15 months, understands just how significant and critical our wireless communication and our entire telecommunication industry is. Something like this cannot happen. This, Jalen, would never happen in South Korea. Mm. They are the most like internet-connected nation in the world. And we have to be like that, especially as we move to 5G. If we want to compete on the world stage, we need to have a reliable telecommunication network.
We're joined this afternoon by tech journalist Andy Brouard, friend of the show. Andy, answering questions about that massive outage at Rogers that, you know, just put so many folks in a position that, hey, what do you do when you don't have, you know, those services that you've depended on, that you just take for granted? Andy, a couple of questions coming in. Mike wants to know, would having your phone on roam have helped?
No, it's because the entire network went down. And what was funny is when I woke up, I have I'm on the Fido, so which is part of Rogers. And I woke up and I noticed I didn't have connection. So I restarted my phone doing troubleshooting 101. I thought it was my phone, and then it still didn't come on. And that's when I realized that it was on a network wide. And I looked on Twitter, and sure enough, other people were having the issue. So it wasn't about roaming. It was the actual network. It's kind of like when your Wi-Fi at home goes down, nothing's going to work. And it's just that on a national scale.
Someone else was wondering if this, I mean, there's all the talk about the Rogers Shaw merger, if this could have an impact on that.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's dead in the water. There is no way the Canadians are going to stomach a merger with Shaw right now. It was a $20 billion merger. They were having a hard time right now, as is, before this happened. And I think this is really going to kill that. This is not the first time. This is the second time. And then they're trying to merge with Shaw. What we really need is fresh new competition. I mean, we need that coming from the government to really mandate that to happen so that we have more choice.
Andy, always a pleasure. Thank you for this.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, take care. Andy Brar is a tech journalist, one of our go-to guys to chat with when things like this happen. Province has been seeing some severe weather, and you know what? It is severe weather season. We've seen it a lot recently, especially in the past week or so, from tornadoes in central and southern parts of the province to wicked thunderstorms in this neck of the woods. It's been a wild couple of weeks. Into this week, as I've been telling you in the forecast, boy oh boy, it's heating right up after a soggy, soggy June. Let's break it all down. We're joined by senior climatologist at Environment Canada, the one and only David Phillips. David, welcome back to the show.
Well, Jaylen, thank you very much for inviting me on. You're right. I mean, this is the beginning of the, I think we've had the monsoon season in June and the first part of July. My gosh, we've seen really almost double the amount of rain you've got. I don't think the province has ever been greener than it is now. I mean, farmers have to have smiles from ear to ear, ranchers. I mean, this is the moisture that you needed. Now, of course, what that does do when you start warming up, then you've got the moisture, and those are two ingredients that you need for creating severe weather. The heat, the moisture, and boy, then you get those afternoon thunderstorms.
Yeah.
And we saw that last week. Really, it was a rollicking kind of week on the prairies, particularly in Alberta. We saw a number of tornadoes. We had a large hail, and I mean, hailstones. I mean, my gosh, they were talking about hail as hen size hail, golf ball, loony, ping pong, quarter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nickel size. I mean, it's all over the place. And of course, that's what you get when you get these supercell storms and strong winds, winds in Calgary over 100 kilometers per hour. And but then, of course, you also got the tornadoes.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw them on July the 5th, parts of central Alberta and Alliance and Consort. And then, of course, we saw last Thursday some very serious kind of tornadoes and funnel clouds near the Sundre area of around Calgary. There was actually even a tornado warning out for Calgary last Thursday, and also at Red Deer. So it was really a very active atmosphere, unsettled atmosphere. And then even on Friday, it moved in. We saw some tornadoes in Saskatchewan, and there were some thunderstorms occurring in Alberta. So hey, it was really a rock and rolling kind of a week. But this week, my gosh, I think it looks like it's going to be the warmest week of the entire summer so far. And I think it's really just a little glimpse of really what is going to set in from now on.
Oh, all right. So if you're liking the warm weather, this could be good news. I want to cycle back to the tornadoes just for a second here, David, if you don't mind.
That
was last Tuesday, those three that happened, Alliance, Consort, and Neutral Hills, kind of in the same area. And they registered an EF0. What does that mean? Just the lowest?
Yeah. It's we have six. The scale goes from EF0 to EF5. So we have six categories. Now, an EF0, I mean, you normally does not see not any deaths with that. It really does able to knock down sheds and garden sheds and things like this. I mean, the winds can still be up to 100 kilometers per hour or a little bit more, but they're little guys. They also tend to be a little smaller. They don't stay on the ground very long, and but they can scare the bejeebies out of you because you see it touching down, and it can cause, I mean, my gosh, it can cause a lot of debris flying around, and so they were a little stronger on the 7th, although I think the analysis hasn't been completed, Jaylen, to know exactly how many occurred then, and also what the wind speeds. The EF scale is really looks at the strength of the wind and also the kind of damage that it does. We saw that on the July 7th tornado. It was strong enough to certainly flatten one dwelling. I think about 4, 5 to 9 were significantly damaged. Transmission lines were down, but debris was everywhere, and certain roads were closed for a short time. But there was also a lot of hail. And look, some people described it as a war zone, and that was just, again, we're not sure of the strength. I don't think it was anything greater than an EF1, which would have been, say, winds of about 125, 130 kilometers per hour. But these occur. I mean, this is the time of the year, Jaylen, that this is the beginning, this is the peak of the tornado season. If you looked at it on a monthly basis in Alberta, you don't get a lot. I mean, you get plow winds and straight line winds. I mean, winds event, Jaylen, can be as damaging as tornadoes. Mm-hmm. They just don't have maybe the status of a twister. They don't have that rotation of the cloud that when it touches down, it just scatters debris and what we often describe as a herringbone kind of pattern. It goes in all kind of directions, very chaotic. Whereas a straight line wind or a plow wind will just be like a wind that comes right down from the atmosphere and then skirts along the surface with bending the corn or bending the trees in the same kind of direction. But they can be pretty mighty too. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of the ones actually on the Friday in Saskatchewan were they think they were more damaging. I think they were EF1. They knocked down, took off roofs, and I think there was a horse trailer that was thrown about, just picked up like a dinky toy and just tossed away. I think there was a horse that was killed. So but this is the time, really, Jaylen. You get the heat, and then you have all that moisture. You've had double the amount of moisture in the last 40 days in parts of Alberta. You've seen double the amount of moisture, and that's provides the moisture that's the fuel that drives these things. You get the dynamics in the atmosphere and winds coming at different directions and different speeds. You get that rotation of the cloud, and boy, the tornadoes can turn out. I think you get about a dozen per year, but you've already had a few, and the season has really just got going.
Well, and you know, out here, of course, with what happened in Pine Lake and the Edmonton tornado so many years ago, people are really aware of those warnings and those watches, and I think they pay a lot of attention. When you hear the word tornado, I mean, it really sets a lot of folks, you know, back on their heels, David. So it's always good to make sure that they have great information, consistent, updated information all the time, and know what to do in case there is a warning.
Oh, Jaylen, you're so right. And, you know, I often think that we've got to the point we actually spoon-feed people the weather. And I think that's okay. We want as many warnings, early warnings, as possible. But I remember once somebody told me the best weather instrument ever developed was a pair of human eyes. And, you know, the thing about tornadoes is that there's no tornadoes with blue skies or white puffy clouds. You already know, you sense it, that there's something turbulent going on or in the atmosphere. And so it's not a sneak attack. Someone once said that, well, there's no sort of sucker punches from nature. It doesn't just come and plow you. It gives you lots of warning. That darkened sky, that clouds begin to kind of look like they're boiling, and you may get a little greenish in the atmosphere, and then you hear the thunder and the lightning, and you just know that something is wild. And so really, the getting to safety is the only thing that should be on your mind, yourself and your family, your loved ones, and you know, people, people out there are very respectful of the weather. You've been hit hard a lot, not just tornadoes, but windstorms generally, forest fires, and things like that. And so I think people really know what the kind of what you should do when nature gives you a forewarning that it's going to hit you.
We've been talking with Senior Climatologist with Environment Canada, David Phillips, about the wild weather that we've seen right across the province over the past week, from four tornadoes reported last week. There were some wicked storms, massive winds as well. David, kind enough to hang on for a couple of more minutes because he alluded to the fact that it looks like we might be out of monsoon season into some nice weather that we can expect to see for maybe hopefully the coming couple of months. We'll see what happens. But this week looks good in Calgary and Edmonton right across the province, David.
It really does. This is what I call the muscle shirts and tank top kind of weather coming your way. I mean, not as humid as you see in parts of eastern Canada, thankfully. But boy, temperatures in Calgary could be, this week, could see 3 days with temperatures above 30. There are some years you don't get any of those. In Edmonton, I see 2 days, but in the high 20s too. Mm-hmm. So this is really going to be patio drinking weather, I think, this weather and this weekend's good for the Stampede, of course, in Calgary, but just anybody who started their holidays now. And, you know, Jaylene, you wouldn't want to have all your good weather in June when school is still in and vacation hasn't started. So what we're seeing, and that's the pattern that we see. I look at my maps here for the rest of the summer, the rest of July into August, and it's showing two things which I think are very interesting. One, it's showing that across the entire province, it's just warm, warm, warm. I see every week, I looked at the weekly ones and the American forecast, and they're all singing from the same song sheet. It's a big high-pressure area that's going to bring in a lot more southerly air, and that's going to be the kind of pattern, the personality, I think, of July and then to August. And July is the warmest month on average during the year, and August is the second warmest. Mm-hmm. So they beat June. So I think that's the pattern we're going to get established. And, of course, in weather, persistence does take hold, and what you see is what you're going to get. Now, from precipitation, Jaylene, always tougher to get precipitation right. I mean, it's hard to get tomorrow's precipitation, and when you look at it for 60 days or 90 days ahead, but it's showing something. I've never seen this, such a huge area of below normal precipitation. Mm. So all of that rain that you were cursing in June and early July, you'll be blessing when we come into July. So farmers are going to say, well, you know, we're glad we had that rain because now we've got the heat to grow those crops. We're not getting the rain, but we don't need it because we've had so much of it in the early time. So it's almost like utopia. This may be, in fact, one of the best growing seasons ever. I mean, potentially it has for, if we keep those hailstorms away, then I think that those what we call sometimes white combines, well, then they that would just be an ideal situation. Things are very optimistic. And then, of course, we don't have the forest fires either.
Yes.
Because it's been so wet and it's so green. And that's great, not just for forest firefighters, but even for people who are going on holidays. You can have campfires and no restrictions. And so I think the weather really has cooperated tremendously at the early part, and I think the promise going ahead looks really very summer-like.
And David, we'll have to leave it there this afternoon. Okay. Always appreciate your time and our conversations. Thank you for this.
Thank you, Jillian. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. David Phillips, Senior Climatologist with Environment Canada. That fella has forgotten more about weather than most of us will ever, ever know. Now, we know that there are plenty of folks, plenty of you who are hitting the road for summer vacation. You're doing a lot more road tripping these days. So perfect timing for our next conversation. Of course, it is Motor Monday with Brian Turner. Brian is a writer for driving.ca. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Jaylen. How are you doing?
Doing super fantastic. Just got back from some vacation, and I know we've been talking a lot and seeing a lot about people being back out on the roads. And when I saw your topic this morning, to be honest with you, Brian, I was like, what do you mean? I wasn't even sure about data recorders in vehicles. Are there data recorders in vehicles?
Your vehicles are capable of learning a lot about you and maintaining that information and transmitting that information. A lot of us know the risks of being ultra connected or uber connected, and our cars are the same way. They love to track everything that we do. in the vehicle. What a lot of people don't realize is sometimes that information can be used, not necessarily in a great way. And in the case of collisions, vehicles, just about anything on the road today has the ability to record the data around the collision. Mm. So when the airbags go off, they have a system that they can record the information that the vehicle records. So was the driver braking? Was the driver steering? In what particular direction? And what was the reaction time? What was the speed? All these pieces of information usually don't mean anything except when there's a serious collision mm-hmm. that might involve injury or death and might end up in a court.
Brian, I was reading that about 95% of new vehicles have onboard event data recorders, these EDRs. And so are they only triggered when an airbag goes off? Is that it?
That's usually the single cause that causes all this information and data to be collected and stored on the vehicle to be retrieved by people at a later date. Yes, they also record a lot of things during normal driving occurrences, and some of us sign up willingly for that. Mm-hmm. Anyone who uses collision insurance that requires a data collection so that the insurance company knows you're actually a cautious driver. You're never really speeding, and you're staying within the rules of the road. Usually in a collision circumstance, it is the airbag deployment that sets all this in motion.
How long is that data kept for?
Well, that's the thing. It's there permanently. It becomes part of the permanent hard memory of any number of computers on the vehicle. At one point in time when airbags first came out, we're talking about the early 90s, it was done on a separate hard module, separate little box underneath the dash. Now it's usually just incorporated in the software of other computers. So there is no one little computer that's collecting this information. It's everything on board the vehicle. And what can happen is if there is a some type of allegation of liability, mm-hmm. then the information can be subpoenaed. That requires you to know that you have rights. And I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a legal expert, but if you're in that situation, you really want to know, because your car can tell tales on you.
Yeah, without a doubt. They'd be a gold mine for insurance companies, without a doubt. So here's the question. Can they be disabled? Should you disable them?
That's a great question. Some of the early models, like I said, had a standalone hard box computer, easily disconnected, and didn't really cause any problems. But now that they've just introduced this recording systems into the existing computers that are required to run the engine, control the emissions, and control the transmission and all that, you really can't remove it. You'd have to have the ability to rewrite the software of those devices so they don't collect the information and they don't store it. And that capability is well beyond the average consumer, for sure, and just about any shop that does repairs to these vehicles won't have that capability.
Oh, Brian, we're being tracked everywhere we go, aren't we?
It's terrible.
It's the reality of it. It's just the reality of it. And I know, you know, some people get really ticked off about that. But the fact is that, I mean, we're on tape kind of wherever you go. If you're walking down a street, your phone's showing where you're going, your cars are recording what you're doing. It's just really a reality. But I think it's important that folks know that these are in their vehicles in case they didn't. And I drive an older vehicle. I drive like a 2012 Mazda 3. I found a list, and guess what? I'm on that list. Because you can find which vehicles have these.
Well, that's the problem. It's hard to find accurate, up-to-date lists. And you can pretty much assume, I'm going to go into the late first part of the 2000s. So anything after 2009, 2010, just about any mainstream vehicle will have built this recording capability into existing software on board. That's not a separate module that you can just unplug.
All right. We find it difficult to unplug at the best of the times. Doing it on your car, even more difficult. Brian, thank you for the heads up and the info on this. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Safe driving,
yeah,
everyone.
Yeah, you too. Brian Turner joining us this afternoon. It's Motor Monday with Brian Turner. Of course, Brian, a writer for driving.ca. You can check out his work again, driving.ca, and he's working on something on these event data recorders. Some of the information that I had found, you know, is about as many as 95% of new vehicles have these EDRs that capture and store this data. But yeah, think about that, eh? If you're in an accident, I mean, it could be a good thing. And, you know, I know some people might think it's a bad thing as well. But you can check out Brian's next article at driving.ca.
Hey, I'm Ted Henley. Thanks for listening to The Drive Podcast. Please tell your friends about what you're hearing. Also, please rate, review, and subscribe. This podcast, of course, is free wherever you get your favorite content. If you want to hear The Drive with Ted Henley live, then please tune in or stream the show weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on Global News Radio 770 CHQR.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.